Okay, let's give a rousing Tulare County welcome for our warm-up speaker, Randy.
Thank you, Rick. My name is Randy, and I am an alcoholic. My friends call me Cowboy, and I hope that that all of you will, too. I like having friends today. So, and we're real glad to be able to come back down here and share a little bit with you guys tonight. And Rick, thank you for that wonderful dinner. And I'm so full. And since I've, you know, your main speaker tonight, I've lived half of his story with him. So I think I'm going to take a nap while he talks. So, but anyway, I like to kind of start up. Was any of you here last time we were down here? Oh my goodness, some of you never learned. But anyway, okay, wonderful. Thank you guys for coming back and letting us share with you again. So, but anyway, I just need to kind of start off here with a little story for you. I don't want to get real drunk a lot tonight. I don't think y'all need lessons in any drink or anything, because y'all look like a last call crowd to me anyhow. So anyhow, but you know, just to kind of calm my nerves a little bit down and kind of get us going here a little bit, I'll share this story with you. And some of you was here, I got to tell you another one. This is even better than the car story that I told last time, but anyway, I'm out there in my barn one day, and I'm looking up there, and up there at the house there, and my son and some of his friends are up there, and they're playing basketball. Well, they have this one friend, I forget the kid's name, but anyway, he's 6'6", a junior in high school, basketball player. I mean, the colleges are already lined up for him, you know, he's got a pro contract waiting for him in Europe if he wants it, and all this kind of stuff, and anyhow, they're feeding him basketball, and he's running up there, and he's stuffing it. So I'm looking at that, and that's the whole backboard would just shake whenever he'd do it. They was all oohing and on and everything, you know. And so I told myself, I could do that. Well, so, you know, my pride, my ego, it kind of has an information center in it built in, and sometimes it gives me the wrong information, but anyway, they all kind of disperse and leave and everything, so I go on up there, and I grab me one of them basketballs, and I proceed to try to stuff this basketball in there. Well, I think I got six inches off the ground that first time. And I looked, and I had cowboy boots on, and at that time, I was riding a lot of horses, and I had spurs on and everything. I said, well, this is what my problem is. So we just get rid of this, you know, take them off, and that gave me another half inch. So hanging in the garage is one of them little round trampolines, you know, that you jump on. You know, it's one of them exercise things, you know, you jump on it for 15 minutes a day, and in 90 days you'll look like Tarzan or Wonder Woman, whichever, you know. But anyway, it's hanging there on the garage. So I got to thinking, well, if I get that thing situated right here, and then I got my daughter, she was kind of little at the time, you know, she had her little basketball there, so I grabbed it. So that little basketball is going to make the hoop much bigger, right? So when I get up there, I'm just going to kind of stuff that little basketball in. I'm going to hang on to the rim a little bit, you know. And the Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote couldn't have planned this deal any better. So I get my little... And now I want you to know about this basketball pole. It's an important part of this story. It's this big around. I stole it from my employer. And when I'm taking things, if I'm stealing something from my family, I'm not sparing no expense. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm thinking I'm dad of the year doing this kind of stuff. So anyway, basketball pole's in front of me. There's my trampoline. Here's my little miniature ball. And I take, you know, and I get me a running start there at that trampoline. And I'm expecting to go up. But I went straight. And I hit my pipe so hard it just kind of made a pinging noise, you know, whenever I got done with that. But anyway, why are you telling us this? What's so relevant about this story? Well, I did that when I was 2 years sober. Okay, so there's really no need in me trying to, you know, tell you how to drink and stuff like that, right? Because we can get, I can still get really stupid then and there, but I'm here to tell you, it's hard work being stupid, okay? So, in case any of you have that problem, why, you know, believe me, it's rough sometimes out there. But anyhow, you know, like I say, I'm just grateful tonight to be down here and grateful to, you know, to share a little bit with you. I was born on a ranch, and if my childhood was spent there on that ranch, if I could spend my childhood again there on that ranch with them same two parents, I would. There was nothing, I don't come from where a lot of folks come from around here in Alcoholics Anonymous, but here we are. That's just briefly about me. My story is just kind of like everybody else's here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, we all come from different parts of town, different kind of backgrounds, different this, different that. But the basis of every story that I've heard, including mine, is that, I drank a lot. I made bad decisions and choices when I was drinking, and my life was a mess. And I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and finally surrendered, and my life got better. And that's basically what it is today for me. When I say my life got better, it even was getting better my first year, because I was going to streamline things for you guys. You know, I was going to redo them steps a little bit and this and that, you know. And the old timers, when I got here, I have sobriety date May 18th of 1990. And when I got here, and the guys that had 25 years in this program when I got there were a little bit different than the guys that have 25 years of sobriety today. They were kind of a grizzled lot, you know, but they still kept welcoming me back, and I'd run them down some stupid plan, and they'd look at me and grin and say, well, you know, just keep coming back anyways, you know. So, but anyway, I finally surrendered, but my life was getting better during that time too. And once I finally did surrender, my life got better, and it hasn't been, you know, it hasn't been without disappointment, it hasn't been without heartache, it hasn't been without loss. You know, but my life got better through all those things because of Alcoholics Anonymous and you people in it that were, you know, telling me to keep coming back and didn't care that I ran into basketball poles and stuff like that, you know. So anyway, the book here talks about a little bit about what we do with our pride, and I was going to read that a little bit to you too, but, in fact, I'll just do that right now. Here on page 75, it tells us what to do with our pride, and it says, we pocket our pride and go to it, eliminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on a broad highway walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. And, you know, that we pocket our pride. My pockets have holes in it sometimes, and my pride will fall out, you know, and there it is again. But the part that I, when I read this, when I first read this thing, and it says that, and this is in the fifth step, by the way, and we can look the world in the eye. And, you know, what's important about my story is that I'm a recovering liar, okay? And I told my first lie way before I told my first drink. You know, I that ranch and those nice parents that I had growing up, they were just a little bit too strict for me. Okay, but I learned something. You know, my mother would say, don't you lie to your father. I won't. But then I learned that sometimes that honesty deal isn't what it's all cracked up to be, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, I mean, my father was a fair man, you know, and if, you know, he wasn't abusive or mean in any way. But if you had it coming, you know, you could plan on getting it. And he might even get a few practice swings in too while he was at it, but I don't know. But you know, so, and I have a, I say I had, I have a deaf sister, and I learned that I could, you know, if something was wrong or something didn't get done or whatever like this, I could come and blame it off onto her. First of all, she didn't know I was doing it, obviously. And my dad would go lighter on her because of her handicap. And I figured all this kind of stuff out, you know, at an early age. So, you know, the behavior was already set up. All I had to do was add alcohol, in which I did. And, you know, but that look in the world in the eye for a liar like me, that is big time stuff. You know, out of all the gifts that I get from Alcoholics Anonymous and just being, you know, and whether I think that either if I didn't do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, if I just stayed sober, I would get some of those gifts anyway. But the fact is that, you know, that we come here and we try to do these steps to the best of our ability and pursue with this program, you know, our lives do get better. But, you know, it's amazing, you know, how I don't have to lie about where I've been tonight. You know, and I can look the world in the eye, and, you know, and I don't owe anybody nothing. And, you know, it used to be, oh my gosh, there's so and so, I got to get out of here, and, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And then, you know, I don't have to explain to, you know, where the money went and all this kind of, you know, don't you know we're only getting paid once a year now? You know, I rebuilt the truck and everything else, you know, but anyway. When I first got here to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I was living in a guy's garage. My wife had attempted suicide, and she is what we call a normie. And the fact is that you could put the amount of alcohol that that she's drank in her life probably in that coffee cup there. And this is where, you know, this is a family disease that that wants to take us all. And you know, so, you know, my kids are a mess and everything. I had, you know, I have one daughter that, you know, thinks she was Janis Joplin. One thought she was Cyndi Lauper. My son's a nerd. I got a six-year-old. You know, thank God for the six-year-old. I had somebody that I could relate to. You know, and this suicidal wife who is now homicidal. Okay, you know, so she's changed a whole lot in sobriety herself. But, you know, I got to admit, too, that, you know, my wife and I are both very committed to her happiness today, okay? So I want you to know that. And, you know, we're still married. All I can tell you is that God wants me married to this woman. You know, we celebrated our 30th year of marriage over on the island of Kauai, over in a beautiful place, you know. My pride and ego got to talking to me again in information center, come down and said, you need to take a surfing lesson. I was watching them guys out there. I can do that. It's just a board. Hell, I ride bulls, you know? So, here we go. Surfing lesson. And, you know, that didn't pan out real well either, but, you know, I was taking this surfing lesson with a little girl from Canada, and something happened to one of the boards, and anyway, we had to share the surfboard. You know, you know what they don't have in Canada, I found out, is sun. This little girl is pretty as she can be. She's there for her 18th birthday and everything, you know, but she just, you know, she's white as that chair. So she learned how to surf real good, you know, she'd come on in there, you know, and her mom would rub her down with suntan oil or some kind of stuff. And now it's my turn to take that greasy board and go out there and try to ride it. You know what I'm saying? So, anyhow, the best I could do was grab a hold of the nose of it. And I just about made it up on that thing. And I know if it wasn't so slippery, I'd have been able to ride that thing. But I just happened to look up, and there's these guys that are grabbing their kids, and they're running off the beach. Yes, yes, this guy coming. But, you know, but, you know, folks, I owe a great debt to Alcoholics Anonymous, and you know, and one other thing I'd like to read for you here. It's on page 132, and these are nuggets that that I'm coming up with, and I'm sure that you guys have all read them before, and then I'll shut up here. But it says on page 132 in this book, it says, we have been speaking to you of serious, sometimes tragic things. We have been dealing with alcohol in its worst aspect, but we are not a glum lot. If newcomers could see no joy or fun in our existence, they wouldn't want it. We absolutely insist on enjoying life. We try not to indulge in cynicism over the state of the nations, nor do we try to carry the world's troubles on our shoulders. When we see a man sinking into the mire that is alcoholism, we give him first aid and place what we have at his disposal. For his sake, we do recount and almost relive the horrors of the past. But those of us who have tried to shoulder the entire burden and trouble of others find we are soon overcome by them. So we think cheerfulness and laughter makes for usefulness. Outsiders are sometimes shocked when we burst into merriment over a seemingly tragic experience out of the past. But why shouldn't we laugh? We have recovered and have been given the power to help others. And that's this. I've been reading this page here lately, and I've read it a bunch of times, but for some reason, just lately, that last sentence there has really just stood out to me. I mean, here we are, a bunch of powerless people that have been given power to help others, and it's just an amazing thing. I don't use that word recovered. I don't sling it out there a lot. You know, I'm not going to say that you're recovered. What I will say is that, for me, as long as I stay in recovery, I can be recovered. But when I go, thinking that I can do this thing on my own, or if I quit being a service, or I quit going to meetings, I quit praying, I quit doing all these things, then, that insane idea is going to come in, and it seems like it always works out. For those of us that quit on this program and stuff. So, I just want to stay here. I have a good friend up there at home that he talks about, the triangle and the circle in it. And he says, and as long as I'm in that circle, I'm doing well. And, and he's got a good shot at tomorrow. And he also has another analogy of it, the track around the football field. That football field is broad and roomy, and as long as we stay in it, we can recover and be recovered and have a good life, and in my case, the lives of others have improved immensely since I've gotten sober, because I was one of them kind of guys that you got to your bottom before I did, and if I could bounce up off of you, that's how it went for me. So I remember, what my dad used to tell me, that we was at a rodeo one time, and he happened to be there, and he knows the guy that owned the horse that I was going to get on, and the guy told him, he says, "This is a rank son of a gun, bucks like hell." And so, I was telling my dad about it, and I said, "Yeah, I got that one over there." And he said, "Well, just remember, they can't hurt you while you're on them." And, so my analogy is, as long as I stay, keep my pockets in the saddle, and keep my right leg on the right side and my left leg on the left side, and I stay centered in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I can, then I can continue to improve and continue to improve the lives of others around me. And, gosh, no greater gift that I can think of is what has been so freely given to me here in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm going to brag just a little bit on my buddy here that you're going to hear here shortly. Me and him, I think now that my parents have both passed away here in sobriety and everything, but he's probably the longest human being that I alive today that I've had a relationship with. We go back to 1963. That's where I first met him, as I met him out there in the parking lot there at Davis High School up there in Modesto. That's where all the scholars hung out. It was out there in the parking lot. Here's this pudgy kid comes up there, and we just kind of looked at one another and said, "We're going to be buddies." And I said, "All right, then. What do you want to do now?" "I don't know. Let's find one of these cars we can sit in and have lunch." So, anyway, but we've been doing this deal for a long time, and he had a bad influence on me. We were just sitting over there talking about, I told him that all my friends are hard-headed, but I said, "You're getting better." but I don't want to get too much in his story. I'm gonna let him share it with you, and you guys will be blessed by it. And just like we're blessed to be here. So thank you all very much for letting me warm you all up. Thank you.
featured speaker, Big John.
All right.
Good evening, and I want to tell you that this is the only program that ever worked for my alcoholism is AA and you people. And what a pleasure it is to be up here. I'm a little bit nervous, you know. I don't know why, but I guess that's part of my upbringing. But my story starts back in my childhood, you know what I mean? And before I say that, I'd like to say something. I'm a typical alcoholic. You know, all week my arthritis has been really bothering me. All week I've been sitting at home waiting for him to call, and I'm sitting at home thinking up lies. How can I get out of this? I don't feel like going. I don't want to go all that way. I hurt so friggin' bad, you know? And then I got to thinking, you know what? My sponsor, which is him, every meeting that I've seen him be there sick, he's been sicker than a dog, and I knew I couldn't swing that lie. So I'm here tonight. I'm hurting a little bit, and I'm just kind of wore out. But and I want you to know that I'm not a professional speaker. I'm doing this because I'm paying back what this program has given me. I'm in no way. I've got such a filthy mouth. I've been practicing all week not to say a lot of nasty words, but I mean that's just a cowboy way of life, because you're constantly yelled at, cussed at, so you pick it up. But I'd like to start with my story. My alcoholism started when I was 6 years old, and I know that seems a little bit young, but I grew up like cowboy. I grew up on a dairy, and I was the oldest out of two boys and a girl, and my dad had everything planned out for him. This is how stupid he was. He had everything planned out for him. He had a dairy. Our lives would have been set up. My brothers and me would be in a dairy business now. But my dad, I had just one little problem with my family. They're all oversexed. You know, I mean, they're all sex addicts. My grandfather, he was a sex addict. My dad, my mom, after they had four kids, you know what? They took off. They start fighting, and this is the kind of childhood I come up with. I come up with a mom and a dad that hated each other, that fought all the time, and didn't give a shit. After the fourth kid was born, they just adios, took off. So I'm left there with a grandfather on the Portuguese side, and I have my other grandparents to take care of us half the year. They're from Missouri. So alcohol has always been in my life. On the Portuguese side, they make wine, they make brandy, and as a young kid, you know, I grew up at early age learning about hate. That's what drove me to alcoholism, was the hate that I had, because my grandfather, you know, here's all my brothers and sisters, they're all 90 pounders, 4'2", dark hair, dark eyes, like a Portuguese. And then I'm the firstborn, and I come out, I'm already 8 pounds, blonde hair and blue eyes. So right off the get, my grandfather thinks that there's somebody messing in the stall. You know what I mean? So all my life that I lived with my grandparents, I was told that my dad was either the mailman or the milkman, and I wasn't worth the shit. So at that young age, you know what? You got parents taking off and leaving. I got two brothers and a sister that are younger than me. I'm six. My sister's three, and my parents take off, and there's nobody else. So I spent the younger part of my life taking care of kids. You know what I mean? And then when we were at my grandfather's on the Portuguese side, you know, you could never do nothing enough for him, and I was never good enough. So, you know, after a while, I mean, people think that kids are not smart, and I will tell you, these kids are so smart nowadays, because I knew at 6 and 5 years old what the hell chaos has already started in my life, you know, trying to figure it out and trying to figure out what the hell did I do? I didn't do nothing, you know what I mean? And stuff that I'm the one that gets blamed for it. From that point on, my life was try to make these people happy, because I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough. And everything that I tried never worked. It never was good. You know what? I shared the other day, I had to share at a meeting, and I told people that if one of my parents or my grandkids would have just come up and slapped me on the shoulder and said, you know what, son, you did good, I would have been set for the rest of my life.
but that never happened. And I got tired of waiting for it. So at a young age, being on the Portuguese side, there's wine on the table 24 hours a day. And we started having these Portuguese celebrations. So I started watching as a young kid. I'm watching all these guys do what they're doing, but I'm noticing half these guys got to be carried to their cars when it's over with, and they're drinking this red stuff. And I'm thinking, my God, you know what I mean? I'm looking, already looking for a way out, trying to figure out what the shit's going on here. You know what I mean? Why ain't I like the rest of the kids? Why ain't, you know, and it, but it never happened. You know what I mean? And so what I started doing is I started following my grandfather where he had the wine in the cellar. And the next thing I know, when he'd take off and go to town, we had a garden hose. Pop the bung hole, stick that in there, start sucking that wine down. Man, it made me dizzy. Made me dizzy as shit the first time. I remember I fell down and knocked the shit out of myself. I was bleeding. And my grandmother come in there and she goes, what the hell? You're not supposed to be in here. And I was already three quarters drunk. You know, and I'm telling her, what the hell? There's nothing wrong. You know what I mean? I'm dancing around and shit. She goes, I got to get you in the house before your grandfather gets home and he's going to beat your ass. So, you know, my grandmother, she was my mother. She took such good care of me. And she lied so many times to my grandfather because by this time, man, I'm in that wine cellar quite a bit. I mean, I'm not kidding you, because alcohol at a young age is already starting to make me feel good. It makes me, you know, after the first couple months, I got over the back into dizziness and falling down and shit, you know, and falling into shit. And I thought, yeah, there's got to be a better way if I'm going to keep doing this shit, you know. So I start sucking on that hose a little slower, you know what I'm saying? Starting to enjoy just a little bit, you know what I mean? And that's what I did. And in the next 6 months, we'd go over to my grandfather on my mom's side and lived for 6 months, and he had a band. He played hill music. Every Saturday night, they would play music, and at 5 o'clock, they would come to his house, and they'd bring, we either had White Lightning or homebrew, that's what them hill people drank, and they would start passing that jug around, and I'm right out there in the middle because I like music, and I'm right out there in the middle, and I'm watching these old boys pass that jar around, and they're tuning up, and then about a half hour into it, they're really starting to jam, you know what I mean, and they're getting it on, and by that time, they're all playing music, and I'm sitting in a corner with that jug. You know what I mean? That first time I drank that White Light, and I shit on myself. I'm not kidding you. I thought, you know what? This is, it can't be that strong. You know what I mean? And I tipped that sucker up, and I took a drink, man, and I'm telling you, it's the worst shit I ever drank in my life. But you know what? That didn't stop me from drinking it the next time. And my grandmother would come in about 9 o'clock, and I'd be passed out on the floor, and she goes, boy, you wore this kid out. Look at him. He's sleeping on the floor. I wasn't sleeping on that floor. I was passed out. You know what I mean? And then my life went on, and there's more alcohol involved. You know what I'm saying? That's what I can say for sure. The only thing besides God and the taxes were there, but alcohol was always presented, and there was no limit. No limit. If, you know, the only rule you had as a Portuguese, if you embarrass the family or the kids, you're out. You can't drink no more. And the second time I got drunk at my grandfather's, I was already out that much. So what I did was I snuck around. I knew it was going to make him mad. And I'd get so drunk and I'd make a scene and I'd have them all laughing. You know, I thought, shit, I'm finally here, man. This is what it's all about. You know, and then as I grew older and taking care of my brothers and sisters, my grandmother died. You know, she was from Portugal, and she never did go to a lot of doctors. And she got sugar diabetes, and she ended up in the hospital. And just the fear of being in that hospital killed her. You know, so right now, on this side, I can't go back to him. This man hates me. He thinks I'm the son of a bitch. You know what I mean? And the woman I love that took care of us so good, she's dead. And then over on my grandfather's side, on this side, my grandmother, after I got about 9 or 10, she got tired of my grandfather screwing around with her, so she just packed her shit and left. So here we are. I got two kids, our two brothers and a sister, and nobody knows where my dad and mom is. You know, my grandparents can't take us no more, and we found my mom. She's up in the Bay Area. And I sure in the hell didn't want to go there, but we had no choice. And at the time, you know, there was none of this putting the kids in the system shit. If you didn't have parents and shit, you were just on the street, and that's how it rolled. But we found my mom, and just what I needed. We found my mom, and we my brothers and myself moved up to the Bay Area out of Modesto, and my mom owns a bar, and I'm thinking, oh shit. You know what I mean? Because now I have to spend my time cleaning that bar up in the morning or at night to make my mom happy. You know what I mean? So right off the get, about 11 or 12 years old, I had a pretty good deal going up there in the Bay Area, man. I would go in and clean that bar in the morning, and I'd have somebody that could drive pull up with a car, and we'd load that car up with beer, and then the next, as soon as I got done cleaning that bar, we're out on the road selling bad alcohol to these teenage kids. So, you know, I was making me a little bit of money, but it didn't help nothing. And then I end up taking care of my brothers and sisters because my mom won't come home. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to sound sickening, but this is what I went through. That's what drove me. I have to tell you this because this is what has really helped me the most. You know, my sponsor told me a long time ago that I got to deal with hate. And I told him I deal with hate. I just stash it. You know what? But it come back and it kicked my ass. So I deal with it now. You know what I mean? One of the things that I can't put up with in alcoholism is hate. I can't hate you. I can't hate the food. I can't hate the floor. I can't hate anything, man. Right off the get, when that hate comes into my head or my heart, I got to start looking in that book for answers, or I got to go back in them steps and I got to look for answers, or I better get my ass to a whole bunch of meetings. But it went on, you know, and I turned about 16, and by this time I'm really drunk. You know what I mean? We're not going to school because my mom is never around. I can't make my brothers and sisters go to school. You know what I mean? And I learned how to fight in a bar trying to get my mom to come home. You know what I mean? That's the kind of shit that I had to put up with. So at 16 years old, I got tired of it, and I couldn't take it no more. Because the booze is already, I mean, it was all about booze. You know, there was no such thing as drugs yet, but it was all about just getting drunk. And I mean, not just getting drunk, but getting down puking drunk or passing out or doing anything to piss somebody off is what I wanted to do, because all they've done is piss me off for my whole life. But it didn't work out that way. So I found my dad at 16 years old. He's in Modesto. So I moved back down there with him, and he's on his fifth wife. And we moved to Modesto, and that's when I started going to high school, and that's where I met Cowboy. You know what I mean? We're just like he said, we're both a couple of hick kids. Everybody at that school were yuppies. You know what I mean? They had the polo sweaters and the peg pants and the beetle boots and all that shit. We're in Wranglers and boots and an old shirt and a Levi coat, and that's what it was. We didn't fit in, but we were out there in that parking lot, and he was out there looking to get in somebody's car to smoke, and I was just out there to take a nice pinch of Copenhagen and spit, and I had 15 minutes to chew, because at that time, they'd kick your ass out of school with a cigarette, you know, so we'd be in some car we'd find unlocked, and he'd change smoke three or four of them in a row. It looked like we started a fire in there, but that's how we become friends, you know what I mean? And that's the truth. We try to figure out how we become friends, and we can't figure it out. He looked at me and I looked at him, and I'm at his house. You know, I mean, that's how great it was. That's how great it was. And I come down here in Modesto, and then I'm really into alcohol then, you know, and then by then the drugs are starting to sit in there, and, you know, being an experienced person that I think I am, I'm going to try everything before I bitch about it. You know, I did a bunch of drugs, you know what I mean? Some of it was for me and some of it wasn't, but we were alcoholics is what we was, you know. But as we went on, we become friends, we're still friends, and we went on through high school and got along real good. You know, our Friday nights was, if we can get a case of quart of beer, we're pretty set up for that night. You know what I mean? We don't have to go nowhere and stuff. And we really didn't get into a lot of trouble because we was country people, and we drank on canal banks, or we'd go over to somebody's ranch and they'd have a fire, bonfire going, and all the kids would be there, and there's no cops. So there was never any law. You know, so we ran around, and then he got married, and that changed it. You know, that changed it a little bit. He got married and was going to have a kid, and I have to say this, that about a year after he got married, it was a New Year's Eve, and we were at a cowboy party, and we come home, and I'm staying overnight at his house with my future wife that I never was intimate with till I got her drunk, and I was drunk, and, you know, I must have been a good bull, because I knocked her up that night, man, and 9 months later, I got a kid, you know what I mean? And it's funny, I don't know if a cowboy even remembers that, but I knocked my wife up on his couch, you know what I'm saying? So that's what kind of friends we are. But, you know, we went on, and we went on, and I thought I was a normal drunk. You know, I had two kids. I had a wife, a Portuguese wife, nice little girl, till she gets pissed, and you know, I thought the world was fine. I was a functioning alcoholic. I could go to work, I could do my job, but as soon as I got off work, man, I'm pounding that alcohol, or I'm going to a little bar down there in Salida that I like to go, that I spent 40 years of my life in, wish I could get the money back. But I stole quite a shit from them too, though. But I mean, that's just the way it went. You know what I mean? And then, as we progressed, Randy had got married again, and he's got a wife that's strict. She's real strict. You know, you can't pull no shit. He can't pull no shit on her. I know I can't pull any shit on her. And I know she's not going to believe me because she knows what kind of friends we are. And she knows I'll lie for him, and he'll lie for me, and we just go off laughing. But that's not how it worked. You know what I mean? So we went along, and I stayed at this little bar down there in Salida, and he was married, and he was kind of doing his running around and stuff. And I got to watching down there at this little bar where I was at, and I got to watching all the friends that I had that were all so close that were starting to die of cirrhosis of the liver at a young age. You know what I mean? And then when cocaine come in, that totally wiped that little town out. Everybody was an alcoholic, and then the next thing you know, everybody's on cocaine, and I mean, it's a friggin' world like you can't believe. I'm just a country hick, you know, and I never did like the shit. You know, it made me too crazy. People didn't like me on it because I tore shit up, but I didn't like it. You know what I mean? But I got to seeing every one of my friends that were on that, they switched from cocaine to crank now. You know what I mean? And now they're stealing from you. And now you can't even leave your pickup out in the front of the bar open because when you come back, you know, they're going to steal the battery. They're going to steal everything that they can get off of you. So I got to thinking one day, I told myself, you know what? I gotta get out of this town, man. I'm gonna end up dead. I'm gonna end up dead here. I'm gonna pull me a good one, and I'm just gonna go back, and I'm gonna find my good friend Cowboy, and we'll just wrap it up like we did before. We'll just calm it down a little bit, and we won't be running around so much, but we'll still be getting jacked up like we wanted to. You know what I mean? But it didn't work out that way. I started, me and my wife started having trouble with my daughter, my youngest daughter, and I tell you what, when you live in a country, then you live in town, and I've got nothing against town, but down there where I live is, man, you really got to watch your kids, because them gang people will come in and sweep you up as fast as you can do it, and that's what happened. Before I knew, it happened that my daughter was already involved in a gang, you know, and she's putting me and my wife through hell, and you know, we're going through, and it's costing us everything and stuff. And we finally, you know, I left that bar, and I knew right where I had to go. I knew what time he got off work. All I had to do was park out front. He'd see my truck, and he would come up, and we'd go to the barber's liquor store, get us some cool drinks, and head out. And he come up to my truck, and he looked at me, and he goes, John, he says, I can't hang around with you no more. And he didn't do it in a bad way. He did it in a calm way and a nice way, but it was seemed like a chicken shit deal to me, you know. But he tells me right off the get, John, I went to recovery. I've got myself cleaned up, and I'm doing better, and I can't hang around with you no more. And I'm thinking, son, how can you say that to me, you son of a bitch? We slept in the same bed together when we were growing up and shit, you know. But you know what that's, he meant, I knew he meant what he said. So I took off, and I went, being the alcoholic that I am, I went and got a case, and I went to the last place we drank, and I stood out there, put on some Hank Williams Jr., and drank that case of beer crying, because I don't got a friend no more. You know what I mean? And shit. And then we got my daughter, finally got my daughter. I tell you, we went through hell to get my daughter out of the gang, man. They threaten him, they'll do all kinds of shit. But we got my daughter out of the game, and at that time, I told my wife that Cowboy had got clean and sober. And I mean, that was just good news for her, because she'd been wanting me to do that ever since we got married, you know. But it didn't happen that way. You know what I mean? So my wife wants to do an intervention on my daughter. So they set up Cowboy and my wife and me and a counselor, and we're in this little room. And I'm the last one to talk, and everybody's talking to my daughter, and I'm sitting there, and I'm guiltier than her. Everything they're telling her I've done, and I'm guilty, and I'm thinking, well, you're some kind of a dad, ain't you? So I'm looking around that room, looking for a little tiny garbage can so I could put my big ass in there so I don't have to talk or even be a part of this. But you know what? That saved my daughter's ass. And then by that time, my wife had started going to Al-Anon. You know what I mean? She told me I was going to, if I didn't do it, that she was going to do it. And I always heard that, man, you don't want them going to Al-Anon. Boy, they're on your ass for good when they get in Al-Anon. So, you know, I never did put it past. You know, she wanted me to get sober, and you know what? I wanted to get sober, but I'm going to tell you what I would think. I would sit there and think, I'll go into this program, but how can I still friggin' drink and not be noticed? How can I? I mean, that's the kind of shit that was going on in my head about the first year. He tried to get me into it. I'm trying to figure out already how to work things my way, so I can be in AA. I don't have a wife to worry about. I'm the father. I'm a Beaver Cleaver's old man. You know what I mean? But it didn't work that way, man. It took me about 4 months after I was ready to surrender to this program. I noticed that my wife, every night at 7 o'clock, was getting kind of gussied up a little bit, and she'd take off and go to this meeting. I didn't know where she was going, so I'm thinking to myself, about the third week into it, I said, we've been married now for a while. She's got a boyfriend, and she's going to dump my ass. She's going to dump my ass, and I'm going to be blamed for all this shit with my daughter and stuff. And that wasn't how it is. Because when I went to this little fellowship that I go to over there, I was going to kick the door in, see my wife sitting there with somebody. I could take him off the chair, kick her ass out, save her, and go home and not have to worry about shit. But it didn't work that way, because when I opened up the door, the Al-Anon room was in the back, and I'm in the AA meeting. Man, I sit down in that back chair. I mean, right now, I'm scared shitless. I'm scared. And I got all these nice people around talking and telling me this kind of stuff and that kind of stuff and come back. And, you know, I'm thinking, whoa, this ain't bad. This ain't bad at all. So I surrendered. I give up, and I told Cowboy that I was coming in, and about 3 months after that, man, I mean, I come in with guns a-blazing. You know, they tell you 90 meetings in 90 days. Well, I'm one of them idiots that went for more. I just couldn't get enough. I could not get enough. I mean, people that I didn't know was telling my story. And I'm thinking to myself, who told these sons of bitches, man? That damn Cowboys went and spread a bunch of shit. Now I got to go in there and shit. But you know what? That wasn't how it was. You know what I'm saying? And I put my heart and soul into AA for that first year. You know what I mean? And we had a little guy down there named Walt Wilson. And he was a little short guy, a mean little son of a bitch. And right off the jet, he'd take you in there and he goes, you're not going to do this now, and you're not going to do that now, and you're going to chair a meeting. And I said, I only got 3 days. I can't chair a meeting. He says, nobody says you're going to run this son of a bitch. You're going to chair it. You're going to chair this meeting. I'm going to show you how to chair. You know, and then he showed me how to wash cups. Because at that time when I come in, there was none of this plastic foam shit. It was, the old timers had them 50-pound cups that you could kill somebody with if you threw them. And they had to be hung upright, and they had to be washed right. And that's what I did. I washed them cups, and I washed them ashtrays, and I swept that floor, and I poured coffee. And then after a while, I got my own meeting. You know, it was on a Saturday night, and I had the speaker meeting. And I mean, like, everything is just wonderful in my life. My daughter's doing good. Me and my wife are getting along better. She's happy with me. The whole family, even the ones that are dead, are happy because they know that John ain't drinking no more. And you don't have to worry about John. You know what I mean? I tell you what kind of a drunk I was. When my son got married, I did my damnedest. I was sober that night because I knew I was going to get blamed. And I invited one of my drunk friends over there. And I was out checking on the cars. And by the time I was out checking on the cars, he was already drunk and he did some stupid shit inside that wedding. And I walk in there and my son, he is pissed at me. I mean, this is his wedding. He don't want to talk to me. And shit. And I see the guy that did it. And you know what? Being the idiot that I am, I took that guy right in the bar where not a lot of people were, and I beat his ass and I had the cops arrested. But, you know, after that, all my relatives would say, boy, when we got a wedding to put on, we're getting no John to do it, man, because he'll give you a friggin' show. You know what I mean? But that's what it was. But, you know, as I got sober and we were helping our daughter, you know, I was about four years into sobriety, and a tragic thing happened to me and my wife. We lost our daughter at 19 years old, and it was a harsh deal. And by the grace of God and you people, I come through that sober. You know what I mean? I come through that sober, and I thought, wow, man, look what AA's done. If I can come through this sober, then I can conquer a lot of other things. You know what I mean? So I did. You know what I mean? I after that happened, and I'm going to tell you, 30 minutes after my daughter passed away, there was AA people. I was sitting in a hospital down there, confused as hell, trying to figure out what went wrong. And the next thing I know, I got a friend of mine named Eddie L. He's got his arm around me telling me, John, we love you, man, and you're not going through this alone, man. So as soon as me and my wife left, and I had to tell him to turn the machine off, so she passed away, and we're sitting right at a 12 by 12. This is how God works in here. It's about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and there's a little fellowship down here called 12 by 12, and nobody shows up till maybe 3 or 4. And we got there, and the doors were open, and nobody was there. So me and my wife sit in there at that table for 3 hours, just wondering what the hell did we just come through. You know what I mean? And I was proud, you know what I mean? Because I didn't think there's any way that I could come through that without being a drunk son of a bitch. But I did. I come through it. But later on that month, I got a job that I really wanted. It's on a big cattle ranch there in Oakdale, and I made a geography move, and I went to work at this big ranch, and Oakdale Fellowship people in AA are some of the beautifulest and nicest people that you could ever meet. If you ever get a chance to go through Oakdale and go to their meetings, I'm going to tell you what, they'd love you. And I had, every day on this ranch, I had a little pond out there. It was loaded with fish, and I had invited all the AA people that liked to fish and their kids, and I'd have them out there. So, you know what? I'm sitting. I've got AA around me. Even though I don't have to leave the ranch, I got AA around me. You know what I mean? And I'm doing good. My wife is working out of town, so I'm the only one there by myself. And, you know, I don't have to put up with her all week. I just got to put up with her on the weekends. But what happened was, is it was kind of down in the fall, and people started coming out, and there was kind of a lot of work to do on the ranch. And I quit going to meetings. And I quit doing the things that the book says we've got to keep doing. You know, like a little bit of inventory on yourself every day. How about hitting your knees before you get up in the morning and asking God, please let me be the man that you want me to be. Let me work this program. And I quit doing that. And at that time, I was having trouble with hating the guy that took my daughter's life and trying to stay within the means of AA. And I just couldn't do it. And I quit going to meetings. I started resting on my laurels. And some friends of mine that I shouldn't have been hanging around with come out. And they didn't drink or nothing, but they put bad things in my mind. You know what I'm saying? So that next day when I woke up with so much hate in my heart. And I wanted to hurt people so bad that every morning I'd go to breakfast after I get done with my chores. Real good breakfast here in Oakdale. And there's a liquor store right from here, that wall. And I don't know what did it, but I just totally, I had so much hate in me, wanted to do so much revenge and damage to people that I just give up. And I went over there and I bought a bottle of whiskey, the stuff that I like to drink, and I got drunk, and I went out after 4 years. I let hatred, that's why I'm telling you today and why I told you about my past, about I can't handle hatred, because hatred, man, hatred would take me out like the biggest thing. I mean, we can hate anything. I mean, you can't even drive now without hating some bitch in front of you. You know what I mean? So it's hard. But my sponsor kept telling me, John, you got to deal with this hate. We take rides and we talk and we talk and we talk. And boy, I knew when my wife got home for that weekend, she was going to be pissed, because I had 4 years clean come through my daughter's death. Like a shining rose, you know what I mean? And I got to tell her that I went out and got drunk. And I was waiting for her. Oh, shit. And I was waiting for her, and she got home, and she seen a look on my face. She goes, "What'd you do?" And I said, "I don't want to tell you." I said, "You won't understand." And she goes, "Yes, I will, tell me." And I said, "I went and got drunk, and I went to do some stupid things, but it's all over with now." And she goes, "You drank?" And I mean, she got pissed. Now, she's a little Portuguese. And she, I never realized how hateful she really was till that day. And I'm standing there, and she grabs a garden hose. And I think to myself, "Oh, she don't start swinging that." And the next thing I know, right upside your head with that hose, I got a warp here to here. And she is pissed off. I hurt her so freaking bad by doing that, but, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, well, I'm on the ground by then, because I'm trying to roll away from getting whipped. And I'm thinking to myself, this is my alcoholic thinking, that hose is only a 50-footer, so all I got to do is roll out there 50 feet. But I forgot that a week before I went and bought a 100-foot hose, and, I mean, the last whip I got with that hose was the metal end of it, man, and she put lights in front of my eyes. But you know what? By then I knew that I have to go back. And this is one of the hardest things, because I'm a retread. I'm not proud of that fact, but you know what? That relapse helped me to be the man that I am today and to get through the problems that I get through today. And I guess that whipping with that garden hose paid off for her. But you know, I knew I had to go back to my home fellowship. And I had to go back and I had to tell them that I drank, because there were so many people that were proud of me for coming through what I come through at the time. And something little stupid thing. That's how this disease is, man. It's coming again baffling, man. And then when you crawl up in your own head and mix that with that, you're pretty much a loser. You know what I mean? And that's what happened to me. But I went back to my home fellowship, and I'm sitting in the chair that I started in 4 years ago in the back, and I come to my turn, and I shared with everybody that I went out and drank and how sorry I was, and you know, and then I'm thinking, oh man, I got all these old timers in there. But you know what? All these old timers did nothing but help me. As I come around that room that day, they come around, and I was feeling pretty good. I thought, man, I'm getting off pretty easy here. Man, if that's all this is going to be, in another month it'll be over with, and I'm starting again. But we got to the last speaker, and he climbed upside of my ass and down the other and pissed me off, and I'm sitting there with my head down. I'm saying, you know what? I don't have to take this shit. I was pretty brave coming in here telling these people that I drank, you know, and stuff. I could have lied. I could have come in here jolly as hell and nobody knew, you know what I mean? But the program tells me to be honest, and if I'm not honest with myself, then I can't be honest with anybody, you know what I mean? So that's what I did. I went in there and I told him, and this old boy, he just ate my ass out. And I stood up. And I stood up. I didn't say nothing. And I turned around and I'd already made my mind up. This is what this program's about. I'm through with this shit. You know what I mean? I ain't taking it. And then I stood up and I walked out. And another very good friend of mine, Keo, he was in the other corner of the room that day. And when I climbed out to get my pickup to leave, that man right there got out there before he even opened the door and says, "John, you got to get your ass back in here. You were in that chair, and this is what it's about, man. You can't give up." And these two people right here beside my wife is why I am here today, sober as a duck, You know what I mean? And I love this program. And what I do today is I don't put myself in any slippery spot, man. And when hate comes up, I'm looking for an answer. I'm looking for an answer in that big book, or I'm looking for an answer from one of you, because I've always got my answers at these meetings and at these NAA. And I've got so much to be thankful for, you know what I mean? This year, me and my wife will be celebrating 47 years of straight marriage, and she could have dumped me. I'm here, Dad didn't even like me, you know what I mean? Being a Portuguese, you have to go and you have to ask the dad. You know, I mean, you have to get on a knee and all this old shit. And I'm thinking to myself, he knows I'm a straight-up drunk. He, you know, and he's telling my wife, you don't want to marry him, man. He's that guy crazy. He's wild. And you know what? My dear wife, she loved me anyway. And you know what? And when we lost our daughter, my wife got into this program so heavy that she went to UOP and got a counselor, a drug and alcohol state license. She's a drug and alcohol counselor now. She's 68 years old. She works at a rehab, and I would wish I could get her to quit, but she can't. She loves to help people in recovery so much, and I see it in her eyes that I've got to just get out of her way and let her be happy. And that's how we run our life today. You know what I mean? The next, another month or so, we'll have 47 years. And, you know, right after our daughter died, the counselor we were going to was a dumb son of a bitch, because he said, you guys ain't even going to be married for 6 months. You know, and I got to go back in a year and tell that dumb son of a bitch, you better go start watching Dr. Phil a little bit more, because you ain't know what you're talking about, you know. When you're in AA, they don't understand it, you know what I mean? They can talk about AA. If they just take time to come to a meeting and see how it works, they know how to, what they're talking about on all this shit, but they don't. You know what I mean? So that's kind of how my life went. Today, what I do is I'm heavily into volunteering for stuff and being a part of. That's why I'm down here tonight. There's no way that I'm a speaker. I'm not. You know what I'm saying? But my sponsor showed me what he's done, and he asked me first if I wanted to come down here and do this. You know what? And I thought to myself, I got to do like this man said. He's already saved my life a bunch of times, so that's why I'm doing it. I'm doing it to make him proud. I'm doing it to make me proud. I'm doing it to give back, because that's what I want to do. I want to give back so much to this program that I owe so much for. You know what I mean? That could have, after that first 4 years I had, kicked me out. You know what I mean? I've been kicked out of every place. I've been kicked out of church. I've been kicked out of every place you could think of, and not in a polite way. You get out! You get out! You know what I mean? I never did get a lot of wedding invitations, because they know that if there's alcohol, oh, John's going to be right down the middle of it, you know. And when you think I won't, I'll sure to hell show you that I will. And that's how I ran my life. But I don't do it that way no more. You know what I'm saying? It's AA. I volunteer. I volunteer at a rehab place. I take them books. I get them speakers. I do. If they want toilet paper, I'm in my truck and I'm rolling down the store to get it, because that's what I'm involved with today. All I can do for this program, so I can keep what I got, man. So I can keep what I got. You know, and what I do is I used to think to myself, you know what? I don't have big money. I can't do big things for this program. And one night, God stopped me and come to my heart, and he said, you know what, John? I don't look at the big things. I look at the small things. And ever since that happened to me, all the small things that I'm doing, man, look big, and it stopped me. See, I talked my own self out of doing them small friggin' things. And you know what I do today? At our speaker meetings, when we have down there, we have a raffle. And I've noticed in the last year or so, since I've been going, because I'm going to kind of go back a little bit, after I lost my 4 years sobriety, I would not, from that point on, I pounded meetings and I went to meetings, but I wouldn't go to speaker meetings and I wouldn't get a chip. I just felt like I am still not worthy of getting a chip. And last year, I celebrated 20 years of clean sobriety, and I got my 20-year chip last year. But I put myself through them years that I went out till then, not allowing myself, just staying in this program. And my sponsor, he had a men's meeting, and the very first of the year, what we do is we go 12 steps, And then we'd go to the traditions. And that's what we talked about for the first 12 weeks of that deal. And that's how I learned about the big book for 16 years. But he's always got a big book, and he's always quoting, so I don't carry one. And he reads better than I do anyway. But, you know, I'm just saying that during this deal, I found out that these women, there's more, a lot of women, there's two women to every man at this meeting. So what I started doing is I started making women's jewelry. And I donate 5 or 6 necklaces each month. And I couldn't believe, I felt pretty damn good, man. I mean, all these women are wanting the shit that I made. You know what I mean? And that's part of making money for my fellowship and keeping this program going. And that's why I do it today. You know, it's all about this program. And all I can tell you is if you're in it, man, just be a part of it. It don't take much to be a part of it. Sitting up here, me and my sponsor coming here today early enough so we could even sit up chairs. That's how he taught me to do stuff. You know what I mean? I'm going to say this and then I'm going to end. But my sponsor, this is what my sponsor did for me. My sponsor taught me how to love myself so I can love others and have a hand out for the people that need help. Then he showed me how to work AA, and then he showed me how much he loved it. And then he walks as an example. So when you got a problem, you don't ask questions. You take his advice, you know. Thank you very much. I just wanted to say something, too. Is there a newcomer in here? Do we have any newcomers? I got a big book for you, buddy.